So with us today is Aaron Fried, and he's another nomad. He's our second nomad interview, and I'll start by saying some stuff that I know about Aaron. Aaron, we met in Berlin, right? In the hostel. Paula's Comfy Corner in Berlin, right? So she received some free publicity now. I'm sure she's gonna be booked for the entire season. So we met in a hostel in Berlin, and we actually had some really nice talks because got to the conclusion that nomadic people are pretty rare. Meaning everyone has a location-free lifestyle, but people who have a nomadic lifestyle like us are not that common, and maybe we'll talk about it later. Interesting things that I know about Aaron are the two following. First of all, he doesn't travel by plane, never. He just hitchhikes on yachts, right?
Sailboats. I think mine have been too small to be considered yachts.
Right.
Anywhere between 9 and 15 meters or so. But
cool. You're gonna tell us about exactly how to do it, because this is really crazy stuff. And the other thing would be the frequency of your travels. You're pretty much traveling from a place to a place on average every week.
Every week.
Right. So you don't stay that much. Which is great. And in comparison to me, for example, that I stay an average of 2 months. Maybe Aaron, start with a quick intro. You can build on the sailboat, hitchhiking and the 1 week frequency, and give us a little bit of a resume of your interesting life so far.
Well, I guess the way I usually start my story is to say that I spent 16 years in the Air Force. And then got out in 2005 and tried my hand at entrepreneurialism and real estate investing, the worst sectors to be in for those of us who were around in 2008. And so having lost everything, I was faced with having to start from scratch and didn't want to make some arbitrary decision about entering a career at the age of 40 that I would spend the next 20 years in. So I decided to hit the road until things became more clear. And I hopped on a motorcycle and headed to Alaska from Seattle, and then back down through Canada, through to New York, and down to Florida, 20,000 kilometers, and I guess that's, 12,000 miles. Sold the bike and began hitchhiking on sailboats, and 15 sailboats later, I ended up in Montenegro with an 8-month pause in Tunisia in between, because I arrived there completely broke. But I would say up until the point that I reached Tunisia, I was sort of piecing together the adventure based on whatever money I had left over that was due to me. But by the time I hit Tunisia, I realized that I needed to create a new pace, and that had to involve not only moving but working and supporting myself. So I established a consultancy, and I've been doing online consulting and social media and business strategy and lightweight web design using templates for clients in Paris and throughout the U.S., I guess that's how I got to where I am right now, which is in Łódź, Poland, where it's very cold.
Yeah, we just discussed how cold it is in Berlin also. So, big nomadic lesson, Aaron. Don't travel to Europe in winter. But, yeah.
No, actually, this is quite intentional for me. After having spent many months, if not, I guess I haven't added it up, a year in warmer weather, I was really looking forward to cold and snow. So
pretty cool. Yeah, I enjoyed the last winter I had in Zagreb was fun with all the snow, but then a second winter in a row in Europe gets to you. So I think
the novelty wears off.
You should only do one at the top. So that was actually a really interesting story. It involves 14 years in the U.S. Army and all this traveling and traveled by land with a motorcycle and traveled with with sailboats, and now traveling by land again, but on public transportation. So interesting stuff.
I just decided that running away, as I called it, was the answer for me. And so I set a timer on my Macintosh computer for 90 days, and it counted down. And I left to the second that I set that timer.
And that's amazing.
Felt good. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I also had a timer at work when I, you know, in the last days I couldn't deal with it anymore. And I had like, I think in the last 100 days I had a timer also that counted hours of when exactly am I breaking loose from work. So I guess it's a narrative that comes back to all of us.
I think that getting something on a calendar is the way to make things happen. It's proven true for me for a lot of years. Somewhere I have a time. Oh, 2 years, 5 months, and 1 week since running.
Nice.
But timer tells me.
That's cool. And tell me what was it that pulled you into a nomadic lifestyle? Because let's say if we're not happy in our life, there are many paths we can choose. And usually people just change their location, go to another city, change their career. And you made a drastic, really a drastic call. I can't even recall why I decided, but was there something that told you, okay, this is the lifestyle I want to try?
Well, I want to say first that I don't think the nomadic lifestyle is necessarily born of pain or sadness for everyone. I think for me, it was an act of desperation. The last few years of my time in Seattle did not go well personally or professionally. And I felt like a broken record. I didn't have stories to tell. And I really wanted to be able to sit down at the proverbial fire with my friends and have stories to tell, but I really felt like a broken record. There's a quote, I don't know who said it, but that ambition is the last refuge of the failed. And I felt at the time that since I was sort of stuck in this rut of failure, that I could choose something ambitious, and that at least gave me something to look forward to and for other people to find me interesting again. So I think also the seed was probably planted because some way or another, probably by accident or by fate, I came across the idea of boat hitching. And that intrigued me because I had been dabbling in sailing throughout the years, and the idea of crossing the ocean really appealed to me.
Cool. That's cool. So basically, when you started, it was more like a boat itching idea or lifestyle and less a nomadic. I had a conversation with the Wandering Earl, and that was the first interview. He's a very famous blogger. And he said that he understood that he's doing this nomadic lifestyle only 7 years after he started. It got to him only 7 years after that's actually what he's doing now. So, for you, it was, I guess when some of the people ask you, what are you doing? For some of them, you tell them, I have a boat itching lifestyle in a way. It doesn't really has to connect with the nomadic one.
Well, I have to say that when I first started the journey, my intention was to only go as far as Beirut. I sort of had this Beirut or bust mantra. And there's a wooden sign on a wooden post forest somewhere in the middle of the Yukon that says so. I just wanted to sort of start a new life in Beirut because I have some French and Arabic background, and I grew up in the Middle East and have an affinity for that culture. But somewhere sitting on a sailboat in the middle of the Atlantic, the Jack Iron was the name of it. It was a 39-foot Corbin, which is a great boat made in Canada. I just was sitting on the deck of the ship at night and having my sort of private moment while the other three crew members were sleeping and thinking, I think I want to go all the way around the world. So I let go of the Beirut idea and then had to start envisioning a nomadic lifestyle. And I don't think the reality of it, I guess I didn't think seriously about the logistics of a nomadic lifestyle until I hit Tunisia. When I realized I was there to set up a consultancy that I would soon have to take on the road.
Okay.
But I really feel fortunate to live in this day and age where Wi-Fi is all we need to be able to do this. I cannot imagine how people did it in days of old, where they would show up in a city looking for work.
Yeah, that's very cool. You know, on the blog today, someone gave a comment on an article, and he said, "I don't get it. You keep on speaking about making a living as a digital nomad with laptops, and what? Why don't you share any knowledge to other nomads who don't want? They don't have the money, and second of all, they don't want to make a living with a computer." And I don't really know what to say to these people, because of course we have our own lifestyle and we discover that the internet is the big thing, the big liberator. But some people don't connect to it. You know, they say, no, I want to do I think they feel that their lifestyle is a little bit more authentic than ours, because they actually, you know, we have something that gives us guarantee. We have our clients or whatever. We know that, you know, now that if you move to Krakow, you're still going to have the same clients. But those guys are really living in uncertainty. And I wonder, do you think they're better than us?
Well, there is security and Wi-Fi. And I will tell you, I think I mentioned, actually, that I met a bartender working at a hostel in Vienna, Rosensteiner, great hostel. His name was Matt. And Matt had been traveling for 13 years. And he claims, and I believe him, he's an incredible guy, that he just found work in every city he arrived in. He has worked at gas stations, he's picked berries, he's bartended, he's cleaned, he's done it all. And I was terribly inspired by that, and I don't know how he does it. He did say the secret for him, though, was hitchhiking, which I don't hitchhike cars. I don't know how. I've never done it. I could hitchhike boats, but not cars. But he found that was a great way to meet people going into a city. They would get to know him and his character, his personality. They'd like him, and then they would do their best to help him find work. And I think maybe what you found, as probably all of us have, that the longer we do this, the more people are inspired by the story, the more they want to help. I know that I found that to be true in hitchhiking sailboats. You know, you go to the first guy and say, "I want to do this," and you're like, they're a little bit hesitant. But once you've gone a third of the way around the planet on sailboats, people think that's pretty cool and want you to be a part of their story.
I totally agree with you. Yeah. In a way, for me, I have to say that this digital nomad lifestyle of me counting on my clients, on the clients that are always there, in a way, for me, it's decreasing the dependency on the people I meet on the road. Which is a little bit sad, because if I would go to each city and you need favors from people, and I don't want to be in a position that I need favors. So in a way, I sold a little bit of my liberty and to buy this security by having a digital nomad lifestyle of, you know, going to Berlin and then going to co-working places or whatever. So I guess those guys, when they go to a new place, they have, I have to say I'm a little bit envy of them, but also not sure I could have done it. And you have this part, because you have this hitchhiking, boat hitchhiking, so at least it's something that you do need the help of people on the way. And I think it's pretty cool, because then you put yourself in a situation that it's not all in your control, which is something that I guess everyone...
I believe that life is largely a zero-sum game. There may be some room for abundance, but for the most part, every benefit has a cost, and every cost has a benefit. And, you know, you and I, who are digital nomads, have the luxury of knowing that whenever we arrive somewhere, we can just plop ourselves down and Wi-Fi and get the work done and feed ourselves. But we can live a very expensive lifestyle. I have to tell you that for the last month, I've been mostly inside in Poland, not meeting people at all. Whereas if we were to take the traditional approach to work, such as what Matt did, you know that you have to get up and get out of bed at a certain time to be somewhere, to work for someone that's given you this opportunity. And as a result, you can take part of the community in a way that I don't. And I got to experience that shortly in Tunisia. Instead of just doing consulting online, I was also teaching English. And as a result, I became part of a community there and made some excellent friends rather than just mere acquaintances. So, yeah, I do envy them to a certain extent.
That's cool. Yeah, well, we should switch. I think every digital nomad at some point needs to go offline. So I'm
if I could just quit Facebook. Oh my gosh, it's such an addiction.
Yeah, so let's see where we are in 2 years from now.
Okay.
One more question I want to ask you. Did you have, before your nomadic lifestyle began, did you have any signal that gave you the impression that traveling is something that you're really happy about, that makes you, was there any signal that you can, because apparently it works out for you, because it's 2 years and a half now, so the lifestyle works out. Was there anything in the past that you could actually say, yeah, I had it also in this moment, and this is one of the indicators that shows me that this is for me? I'll tell you why I asked that, because, okay, you know, some of our, I don't want to say listeners, but maybe a listener would would have this, you know, a lot of people in the comments are writing, how do I know this lifestyle is for me and is it for me? So I'm trying to figure out if you know, by sharing those moments of, hey, this was really fun for me and I'm doing it now, maybe there is some kind of a signal for another person to say, hey, I also have this, so it must be also something that I should try.
I don't know, I suppose a psychologist could come up with an acid battery test to see whether or not you have what it takes, but I don't have any wisdom in that regard. For me, I grew up overseas, so I think I have a certain, xenophilia. I love things that are foreign. I also was a pilot in the Air Force, so I got to travel a lot. But that said, I don't think that travel was in my blood. I'm sort of perpetually exhausted, and I'd rather just crash on a couch somewhere. So this was really almost outside of my comfort zone to force myself to move all the time. But I think, you know what it is? For me, moving was a nice proxy for doing. I was at a point in my life where I wasn't doing anything, so I felt that as long as I was moving, then at least something was happening. And then I moved from just a moving phase to a moving and doing phase. And that's what I am coming to enjoy.
Wow, this is good stuff. Nice. because there is a song in Hebrew that says millions of people, all of them are alone, but if you're gonna be alone, you better do it while moving. So.
Oh. Yeah. All right. I like that.
Yeah, it's kind of a cult song. Nobody gets it, but maybe they will now after
that. I'd rather write that one down.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. But yeah, I guess this is a motive that keeps on coming back about people who feel stuck in their life. Every day looks like the day before. They're not necessarily sad. They're just stuck. And us taking a decision of saying, yeah, life is short. We're not stuck anymore. So it might be hard and it might be depressing or whatever, but at least it's going to be constantly changing. And I guess this has some kind of, you know, it brings some kind of essence, of at least happiness or essence to our life in a way. So,
I have to tell you a quote that I just uploaded today. It was from Stephen Crosby. Oh my gosh, butchered that. The Perks of Being a Wallflower. He says, "So this is my life, and I want you to know that I'm both happy and sad, and I'm still trying to figure out how that could be." So I don't think it has to be all one or the other.
Yeah, no, it's important to say that this nomadic lifestyle does not guarantee perpetual happiness.
No, it has its moments.
Yeah.
But you know, I was walking down the frozen streets of Łódź today thinking about this interview. You and I had been talking about what defines the nomad. And I know you asked Wandering Earl the same question. He said that if you think you're a nomad, then you're a nomad. Have you done any more thinking about that?
No, I'm still trying to figure out how much do you have to travel and in which frequency. I'm very technical. I'm not that much into, you know, the definitions. I have to tell you, and I told you in our conversation, that for me, a nomad has no home. That's what defines a nomad. Never feel at home. Yes, but not as this is the place where, yeah, I know what you say. It's a really tricky question, what is a nomad. But I guess I think now I remember that I also told you it's a person that knows that is on the road soon.
He's what?
On the road.
Oh, on the road soon. What came to mind in thinking about trying to answer that question that I presumed you were going to ask, I went to the Air Force Academy, and to the outside world, every single cadet at a military academy, for that matter, looks exactly the same, cut from the same cloth. They're the same height, the same color, the same weight. And yet, within that group, within that cohort, within that community, we ourselves looked and felt so different, one from the other. There were still within that group the jocks and the sloths and the geeks and the... We re-stratified within ourselves. And so I think to the outside world, you and I and Earl might look very similar. But within our world, we look very different to each other. Earl's location free, but he seems to spend a lot of time in Romania, and I hope to see him when I go down there, if he'll see me. You have a home that you go to for a couple months every year. I move every week. And so there is something to be said about relative, that we look the same from the outside. Inside, we seem so different. But it can't just be perception, because no one can say, well, I'm a cadet at the Air Force Academy. No, there's gotta be a standard for you to be able to call yourself that.
And so maybe we should do a poll, like a big, giant questionnaire for people about what is a nomad. I think it's really... It's a good question. I'm pretty sure we're not gonna find a solution anytime soon for this one.
Well, if we don't, Eli, who will?
You're right. I'm gonna put it on my wish list for 2015, and let's see.
Okay.
Let's see if that happens. I'm skeptic about this year. This is basically the biggest question there is. But for me, at least, because you know, we associate ourselves to a group, and if you can't even define, when you say I'm a nomad, and you can't even define what is a nomad or what makes someone a nomad, what does it mean about yourself? You know, or
oh, I don't want to go there.
Yeah, don't go there. So let's switch the subject. I'm gonna ask you. Let me go to a less philosophical, before I depress you and one of us at least jump from the window to the cold, let's move on to something less, let me ask you that. According to my philosophy, or let's say my beliefs, our biggest problems as nomads, and by the way, it's not necessarily a bad thing, are attachments. The things that tie us to a place. And by the way, it might connect to the previous topic. We're not going to discuss it, but that a nomad has no attachment. So in a way, this ability to change places has to do a lot with our, let's say, with our circumstances. And most of us cannot just take off because of career, because of a relationship or whatever, of a pet or whatever. And I want to ask you, during those, let's say before your nomadic journey began, if you had attachments, how did you break those attachments to actually being able to take off? And during those 2.5 years, was there any attachment that almost stopped you again?
No and no. most of the attachments that I had. Are you still there? The sound has changed.
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, okay. No, most of the attachments that I had in my stationary life in Seattle seem to have crumbled or fallen away, other than friends. But I felt that I owed it to myself and to my friends to go and get new stories. Along the road, no, I don't think I've been terribly tempted to stop. Although there was an opportunity briefly that I was going to get to sail on a boat and get paid to do it all the way around the world. And that was an attachment that was quite alluring, that was still mobile. but I turned that down. I wanted to be a little more free than that.
Nice. And remind us again what you're doing in Łódź in Poland? For which reason?
Did I tell you this already?
Yeah, you can repeat.
I think you talked about attachments. By the way, unstuck is a word that I often like to use. I feel that as a nomad, I become unstuck. And that lets me decide in any given moment whether I go or whether I stay. And I was in Warsaw eating chocolates, and I ate too many, and I found out they were made down in Łódź. So I hopped on a train to buy some more, because we ran out in Warsaw. And I've stayed here for the last 10 days, and I'll probably be here for 5 more, and I have to make another chocolate run.
Nice.
But it's nice to have that liberty to say that Łódź is home, because this is where I found nice chocolate.
So in a way, you're attached to Łódź chocolate. You yes. find an attachment. Yeah.
Yes.
So, but you're lucky because most of the people are attached to something that is really like impossible to break away from. So this is pretty cool. I think this really connect Aaron to the discussion of who is a nomad and the nomad is a person in a way you can define it as a person whose attachments are really not critical, that you can break away from them at any given moment. I think that's the moment you stop being nomadic. The minute you have these attachments that puts you in the same place. What's your plan for how long are you gonna continue with this lifestyle?
I think probably about 10 or 12 more years. When I think of broad brush strokes, that's about how long it'll take to hitchhike by sailboat and do some overland portions. Right now I'm just wintering in Eastern Europe since it's hard to hitch this time of year, so I'm doing a big loop. And I'm really glad I did it. I don't know how much you've traveled in the Balkans. I think you did, or have.
Yeah, I've been 3 months in Croatia and in Serbia and Bosnia. So yeah.
It's like I'm almost sick of beautiful things. Another beautiful old town, great. More beautiful mountains. Oh look, another lovely mountain lake. Stop.
Yeah.
So,
nice.
But my plan is to return back down to Corfu by April, May timeframe, finish the Eastern Mediterranean. And then, because I wanted to avoid Somalian pirates, I'm going to go overland on Africa, down to South Africa, before picking up the sailing again.
Cool. Sounds like a massive plan. I don't know where I'm going next, you know? After, I know I'm going back to Israel for a wedding, but after Israel, I have no idea where I'm going next. So at least,
I don't know what it's been like for you, but that's when the times I've had the least fun is when I knew where I was going. When I was hitchhiking on sailboats, if I just said, hey, where are you going? Can you take someone? Or I would just be general and say, hey, I'm going east. You know anyone going east? It was great, but the second I had to be somewhere at a certain time, my connections with people suffered. I wasn't approaching them with an open mind and open to opportunity. It was, hey, are you going there? And can you get me there by this time? And so I really now try to avoid it.
Wow, that's a great tip. You know that until now, during all my nomadic waves, I only bought one-way ticket to the destination, and then I would come back when about 3 weeks before I would say, okay, it's time to see the family again, come back. And this time I bought round trip ticket because to arrive to a wedding in Israel. So you're right. It has something that blocks you because if I wouldn't have this round trip, I would probably not be in Berlin now because it would get too cold and I would probably go, I don't know, to France or whatever, but I totally agree with you. And most of us travel with a round trip of hey, you have to be here in this certain day to take the flight back home, and it does block some of the experience. I agree.
Maybe that's the start of defining a nomad. A nomad lives in one-way tickets.
Sounds good, but then again, a person that stays home is also. Yeah, I don't know. This one we're gonna have to tackle when it's more early in the morning. let me ask you. You've been doing this for 2.5 years. Now, do you feel? First of all, do you feel like a smarter nomad, like that you developed skills that you didn't have? And if you could have changed something, not that you should have, but let's say if you From what you know currently, would you have changed something in the beginning of the path?
I wouldn't have bought so much stuff. Provisioned myself very well for the initial journey, and I'm actually pretty embarrassed with how much I loaded up on my motorcycle, and it took me a full third of the planet to shed most of it. I'm down to 2 bags, and it's still too much, but I have found the less that I have, the happier that I am, and I think I'm cracking the code on what I need and what I don't. It is difficult to pack for all weather, because I'm disinclined to buy and sell clothes every year. But maybe that's what I'll end up, because maybe we can't carry it all with us.
Mm. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I like the minimalistic approach. I still think I have too many stuff. But yeah, you know, I have problems in airports recently because my small suitcase in Israel... Israel has a lot of security concerns, so they always give me a tough time when I tell them that I'm going for more than 2 days, when they see me with a small suitcase. Because they stopped me twice for investigations. Yeah, because they're like, no way. You know, there's no way. And I feel embarrassed because I feel like it's too much, you know. So it's interesting to see the difference of opinion. I do think that when I was traveling and I was really traveling between destinations, I would really narrow down the amount of stuff that I have. Currently, I think that it wouldn't make that much difference, you know, because I move every 3 months. So it's like, in a way, you have some kind of a home. But then again, when you move every week, of course, with so many stuff, it's like, it makes you vulnerable. It makes you slower. So... Totally
agree. And it makes you look like a tourist. I really would like to be able to walk around looking like I'm a native wherever I go, and it can't be done when you've got a backpack on your front and your back.
Agreed. I stopped with the backpack. I told you I'm only having this suitcase. From now on, I'm going
I'm carrying a pillow and a suitcase, and that takes up, you know, 2/3 of one of my bags. Because when it comes to sailing, that I feel is necessary.
Gotcha.
Not so much for the hostel world, but...
Okay. Do you have a certain goal you would like to reach during those 10 years? Other than being all over the world, is there something that you're like saying to yourself, okay, I wanna... I'm asking you so I can copy it later, because I also don't have one, so... Got you.
I just want to keep on moving east, eyes forward.
Nice.
And never go back.
Sounds good. What's the biggest disadvantage of this nomadic lifestyle, in your opinion?
Wi-Fi. Dealing with Wi-Fi is one of the most frustrating things. I can never seem to find a good signal that's also near an outlet. Or if I find a good signal with a good outlet, it's usually near bad coffee. So I can't get it all. The very frustrations of not knowing if the light switch to the bathroom is on the inside or the outside. You know, these little things that when we live at home, we just know instinctually. And so they frustrate me. At the same time, they keep me on my toes when I just don't know where things go. And I try to minimize that to a certain extent. While I'm doing this overland portion, you've mentioned I'm doing 1 week stints. That allows me to create a schedule and a routine for myself. On Sundays, I travel. Sunday nights, I buy groceries. Monday through Friday, I work and exercise, go out at night, and then Saturday, see the sights. And it kind of creates a pace and whatever structure that I know that I can control. Because heaven knows, every time I move, I'm dealing with a whole new world and a whole new floor plan. And new passwords, and new people, and new snorers. So I think that's what I try to do is just create whatever stability I can and let the rest of it go.
Pretty cool. The idea of establishing routines. I have to tell you, when I started this journey, routines for me were the thing to avoid because they were a reminder of past life, you know? But then again, when you do it and everything is so messed up and everything is changing, then having a routine is something really important. And I think it's really admirable that you managed to have a routine in a week before you change, because I need to establish a routine. Now I have in Berlin a routine of going swimming on every Friday in this really cool place for 3.5 euros, exactly on the same hour. But it takes time. So I think it's really challenging to have a routine when you know that you're only staying for 1 week. But then again, yeah, it makes sense that it organizes your life. So wherever you are, you go shopping and whatever. So. Pretty cool. Is there any way you're going to stop before? Let's say you're probably going to be surprised if you're going to stop in 2 years and go back to the States. But do you see a scenario of this happening? Do you see a scenario of this happening? And would you be really disappointed if it would happen?
I don't have designs on stopping. Of course, I realize that's a possibility. If it were due to love or a relationship, I think that would be a really hard decision to make. I can't imagine valuing anything much more than love, but I also know that having set this goal before me, that I don't know if I could be the person in someone else's relationship knowing that I didn't achieve that goal.
So you actually have the goal of traveling for the next 10 years, being on the move for would you say it's a goal?
Yeah, I guess it is.
Wow,
so
nice.
I changed my question, or changed my answer from the previous question, the earlier question.
Yeah.
And I don't just want to race around the world. I want to cover as much of it as I can.
Okay, but would you be disappointed if there is another path that gives you more happiness and you're going to take it and you wouldn't achieve your goal?
In this moment, I would say yes.
Interesting. Good stuff. So for you, I think that there is a difference between you and me, because I'm actually, my basic philosophy, let's say, is that I'm pursuing moments of happiness. And the best way of doing it is by having a nomadic lifestyle. While you, in a way, are pursuing a nomadic lifestyle, which is pretty cool. But it's a little bit different in the thinking. We're both ending up doing the same thing, having a nomadic lifestyle. But then again, the idea behind it, I think it's a little bit more solid for you than for me, which is interesting.
Well, it's not, as someone once said, it's not the thing, it's the meaning of the thing. And I think our journeys have very personal meanings, and yours may mean something different from mine. But that doesn't mean it won't look similar to others.
I totally agree. I guess it's exactly what you said. People can identify us as parts of one group, but the way we do it, our own lifestyle is really different, one from each other. And I guess every person is like that. Even a person that lives in the same place all his life is very different from another person that lives in the same place all his life. So, last question. The last question has to do with sustaining yourself on the move. You know, most people are really, that's what freaks them out. How do I actually make a living to make the dream happen? Now, don't need you to really describe what you do, but maybe a little tip to people who just start, they're probably going to have their own way, their own revenue source, something that you and I cannot even technically advise about, but maybe something on the mindset that you can tell people that want to do it and want to sustain themselves while being on the road?
I would say to have the confidence that there's no reason you can't sustain yourself on the road thanks to Wi-Fi. You don't have to go and try to find a job in every city. And if you feel that you don't have a skill that can be done from afar, it's not difficult to pick one up. And I could recommend websites like lynda.com, which will train you to do all sorts of things that you can do from anywhere in the world that will pay you well enough to feed you and put you a roof over your head. And though you may not be making as much income as you once did, I think you'll end up feeling a lot richer than you ever did, because you'll be seeing the world, meeting people from all over the world, and have some pretty cool offices along the way. Some great food.
Great chocolate, yeah. Amen to that, Nomad. Great, good stuff. So, perfect. So thanks a lot for joining me in this interview, and good luck in the future.
All right, good to talk to you.